Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. Today, I have an interview with Monica Gomez-Hira. Before we get to this interview, I want to share a bit about today's sponsor. This episode of the What to Read Next podcast is sponsored by Courage Under Fire with Lindsay McKenna. Here's a bit about the book. A gripping new novel by Of the West featuring Cowboys of Silver Creek by acclaimed New York Times bestselling author Lindsay McKenna. Perfect for fans of exciting novels of B.J. Daniels, Diana Palmer, and Dolores Fawcett. Here's the synopsis of the book. Seeking an escape from her dark past, Carissa Tullin heads to Silver Creek to build a new life. For Carrie, landing a job at a historical ranch just outside of town is a dream come true, a chance to put her beekeeping expertise to work. Not only does she feel at home in the remarkably beautiful landscape, but she's intensely drawn to rancher Chase Bishop, whose strong, steadfast nature quiets her unease. Maybe she can finally be more than a hunted woman feeling a vengeful killer, a man who has been after her nearly all her life. Chase didn't dare to open his heart again after losing his first love, until Carrie entered his life. Her gentle beauty and nurturing spirit calls to him like no other. So when her enraged stepbrother breaks out of prison and comes prowling around Chase's ranch, the former Marine goes into full protective mode, offering Carrie his shelter and his home. But as the murderer deadly threats draw ever close, suddenly Chase is calling out his killer instinct, knowing he will stop at nothing to keep her safe. This book is cowboy romance meets romantic suspense. This book will keep you at the edge of your seat. Make sure to add it to your TBR. This book is out already, and you can buy it from your favorite bookstore. For more book recommendations, please visit KensingtonBooks.com. Now let's get to an interview with Monica Gomez-Hira. Hi, Monica. Welcome to What's Your Next Podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, sure. My name is Monica Gomez-Hira, and Once Upon a Quinceañera is my debut novel. Currently, I live in Minneapolis, where it is freezing right now, but I grew up outside of New York City in New Jersey, and I am currently working on a second novel.
This is so exciting. I have to say, I truly enjoy Once Upon a Quinceañera. Like, it just brought me back memories of my own. I did not have a quince, but I did enjoy, like, I had to go through, I felt like I had to suffer through plenty of quinces. And the dances and the corte and the stuff. So I can't wait to dive into this process, because it's like, it's a unique Latin experience that it's just unique that people should just enjoy, you know.
I also did not have a quinceañera, but I went to other people's and was sort of fascinated by it, because it, like you said, it was sort of a very uniquely Latin coming of age experience. And the way that the rituals are set up are so meaningful. And then, of course, all the behind the scenes stuff with the families and everything else, it sort of becomes like a bigger deal than you would think it would be. It becomes sort of almost like a wedding.
It's like a wedding. It really is. And I remember it was like in the same venue as a wedding. It was like a hotel. Most of them were, or like dance halls or places where it's like a banquet, like a banquet hall. Yes. And there's like a dress and the stuff that you had to do and the gifts and the dresses, you know, like it, like, and the cake and food. It was like a wedding. It's just like it's like your pre-wedding, you know, gift to coming out to the world.
Yes, and everybody is, you know, absolutely flexing sort of their familial muscles. They are really splashing out and going all out on the biggest dress possible, the biggest cake possible, the choreographer for the dances and everything. It becomes a really big deal.
Yes. And let's talk about, so we're going to talk about quinces now, because this is just fun. So let's talk about some of the rituals that people wouldn't expect that would happen in the quince.
And let's talk about the dancing, because I think we spent a lot of time in the book talking about dancing.
Yes.
And dance rehearsals, because this is not a one day production. This is like months in planning.
Yes, it takes months to put this together. As far as the rituals go, all of the rituals are sort of designed to take the quinceañera, the girl, from girlhood to womanhood. So there, for example, there's the ritual of changing from flats into high heels to show that now you are joining adult womanhood. And then at the same time, you're also taking a last doll and you're handing the last doll to a younger female relative to say, I'm leaving childhood behind and I'm again entering the world of adulthood. And also all of the rituals are very much about I'm entering womanhood, I am now joining the world of adulthood. And yes, I had a lot of fun with the dancing elements of the book, because I thought that that was sort of the most visual element, and it really is a big part of the preparation for a quince. Is, you know, you choose your corte and your chambelanes, and then they practice these elaborate dances, and it's usually more than one. I mean, it's a traditional waltz, and then there's, you know, the baile sorpresa, which is the surprise dance that isn't really much of a surprise anymore, because I mean everybody kind of expects it.
Yeah.
But so there's and then of course there's, you know, the dance with your father, and then your father like hands you over to your date, and then it's like again a transition. And so yeah, I thought that was all a lot of fun.
Yeah, I feel like it's like the gift that keeps on giving. Like, you know, it's something unique, and it's something that's practiced, you know. I think in the American, the US world, like it may be a Sweet 16, but there's like some other stuff that just feels like more in touch with land culture that's only happens in the quince. Mm-hmm. So I really love this. I love this book that just like touched upon that ritual that is like, if you know, you know.
Exactly.
You know, and it opens up to the world large, you know. Mm-hmm. Like there's this whole world of like dances and coming of age and all these different things. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just thought that it was such a fun way to show the coming of age and how it sort of happens over time. And then I wanted to juxtapose what it would feel like if you had grown up in a culture that had really set up that expectation that you were going to have this very specific type of coming of age, and then for whatever reason it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so you sort of always feel a little bit like you missed your chance somehow. Mm-hmm. And so that is basically the way that Carmen, my main character, feels, because she was supposed to have a very sort of aborted quinceañera, like a very small celebration, and instead it just all is ruined, mostly because of her own fault, but she doesn't see it that way for most of the book.
No, she just blames it on other people.
Yes.
But I have to tell you, I'll be honest, I'm grateful, like, you know, when we read Latin books, and, you know, I'm Puerto Rican, so I tend to look out for those voices and those experiences. And so a lot of times they show family as like, we love each other, we're all great. And I love the fact that you show like a dysfunctional Latin family. Like, you know, because it's like, I think there's like, it's great to have a healthy family relationship, but it's not always the case. And I think it's like just showing like you may not like your cousin. Like you may be angry at your cousin. You don't want to hang out with your cousin. Your cousin is not your BFF, and that's okay.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I mean, I think that I wanted to really show a family that obviously is very involved with each other. They really love each other, but at the same time, they get on each other's nerves in a big way, and they're not afraid to show that. Mm-hmm. And they don't always get along. There's, you know, the people who know you the best also know how to hurt you the worst. Mm-hmm. And I think that they really kind of cut to the jugular a lot, my characters, with each other, with their family members, because they know they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about Mauro. And I apologize for the listeners. We're just diving into the book and just a little bit, and we'll chat about the other questions in a few. But, you know, let's talk about Mauro, because Mauro is an interesting character. He's an interesting hero. Like, he comes, he disappears. He was in Carmen's life for a while, and he disappears because, you know, things happen. And then comes back, and he's trying to get in Carmen's good grace, and Carmen's like, I don't like him, I can't stand it, I can't deal with this. And it's an interesting situation, because, you know, there's a chemistry happening, and yet there's enemies that you're like, but you shouldn't be enemies. Like, it was Carmen's fault, but
yeah. Right.
which she hates him, and I'm like, Carmen, grow up.
they have a lot of history before the book even starts, and she blames him to a large extent, unjustly for the most part. She blames him for the cancellation of her own quinceañera celebration, and she never expected to see him again. So all of a sudden, when he reappears in her life in such a way that she is tied to him, you know, where she can't just leave because she needs to keep this internship, she needs to get the credit for her graduation from high school. So it's not so easy that she can turn her back on him. So the fact that they're sort of forced to face their history and kind of get to know each other again, it was fun. It was fun to write. And I enjoyed writing his character, because he just got under her skin so much that it was just fun to write that.
Yeah, I love it. I think it was like something to be said about when you're writing a rom-com, there's like some elements of hate or some elements of enemies. Like, it ignites the chemistry a little bit higher, like it turns it up the volume, and it just like, it makes it much more fun, you know, to see them bickering. You
know? Sure, exactly. And you don't want, I mean, in a rom-com or in a romance, you don't want to watch them kind of fall into each other's arms right away. You definitely want some resistance and some denial, just because it makes that moment when they finally do give in to their feelings just so much more satisfying, because they've been on that journey together.
Mm-hmm. I love this. So let's start with some of your writing and some of the other fun stuff. So in terms of your writing, what made you decide to write YA? Were you a YA reader, or was it something you just realized, like, there's not enough books like us, we should have them?
I think I was one of those people who just had a really intense teenage experience. I'm very in contact with that part of my personality and with that side of myself. I think I've sort of spent the rest of my life after high school processing high school. So it was really a natural fit to start writing YA. And So I became more interested in it, and I started reading more YA, and the more YA that I read, I realized that this is really the place where I felt like my voice made the most sense and where I was able to tell the kind of stories that I wanted to tell. And of course, as I was reading YA, I started to sort of see the lack at the time, this is changing now, but the lack at the time of sort of characters of color, especially as the main characters, sort of having their own stories. And I decided that I really wanted to write the kind of story that teenage me would have enjoyed reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I had this book, Teenage Me, while I was going through my 15-year-old, like, I don't know, 14-year-old. It was literally 14, between 9th grade and 10th grade, that was, like, the era of the quinceañeras.
Yes.
There were, like, multiple, I think I went to, like, 10 of them, and they were different stuff. Yeah, and it's, like, I went to small Catholic school, and thank God I was not in the Cortes. Like, I probably would have said no. Because that's like another added expense. I was like, I'm not going to do that. But yeah, there are like too many of them.
So. That is a lot. That is more than I've been to, I think, in my entire life.
Yeah. And there are like some of them, like, you had a mass. They're like Catholic. I was, mm-hmm. It was like, it was crazy. So yeah, so I wish I had this book to be like commiserate, be like, oh my god, someone else is struggling with this.
This is what it's like. Yes.
Yeah. So what has been your journey to publication?
I've always been writing, but a lot of the time I wrote and I didn't sort of finish. So there were a lot of sort of pieces of manuscript that I've had around me. And I decided after college, I started working in publishing, and I think I still wanted to be close to books and kind of in that world. And then I stopped for a while. I mean, I kept writing. I did NaNoWriMo and all those things, but it wasn't really until I moved to Minneapolis and joined a writing group that I started taking my writing more seriously. And then once I finished the draft of Quince that I was happy with, I started querying agents. And I was getting some nice responses, but I still felt like something was missing. So I entered an online contest, a mentoring contest called Pitch Wars. Mm-hmm. And Pitch Wars, the way it works is they match unpublished authors with published authors who know the industry, and then they help you edit your manuscript. And then they put together a showcase where they present sort of a piece of your manuscript to agents. Mm-hmm. And so I was chosen for that program, and I went through an edit, two edits with my mentor, mm-hmm. and did the showcase and had a nice response. And that's how I got my agent. And then with my agent, I went through another round of editing, and then we submitted the book and sold it.
I love this. And your mentor was Rachel Lynn Solomon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right, she was on the show, so I was like, oh, I know her.
Great. Yes.
Yeah, she was like, I discovered YA over the summer. I took a break from YA for like a few years. I was like focusing on adult women's, and her book, her publisher reached out to me and said, hey, we got this book, would you be interested in reviewing it and see if she comes to the show? And so I fell in love with YA thanks to her book.
She's so great. I mean, she's so smart, and I love her writing, and yeah, she's great.
Yeah, so I love, like, I just realized I love contemporary rom-coms. Like, there's something to be said about that whole process of falling in love and like just trying to figure out first love and coming of age and growing, you know. So.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really a big reason why I like writing YA contemporary romance is just that flush of the first time, like the first mm-hmm. time you feel those feelings, and sort of the intensity of that and the purity of that is just, it's just fun. And, you know, the older we get and the further away we get from that, it's just nice to have that reminder that it's out there, that it existed.
Yes, it is. So what's been the process of writing during a pandemic?
It has not been easy because I did not realize this about myself, but I need a lot of alone time to mm-hmm. write my books, and with my family around me all the time, because we're all home all the time. My daughter mm-hmm. is obviously attending school at home virtually, and my husband is home working from home. So we're all kind of around each other all the time, and it makes it difficult for me to sort of shut them out and concentrate on what I want to do. It's, you know, just as I sort of begin to concentrate, somebody comes and interrupts me, and then it's like, oh, okay. So it has definitely been challenging. And even though we've been in the pandemic for a year, I still feel like I'm sort of figuring out how it all works.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where we all are. You know, like, I feel like we get some good days, some bad days, some days that feel like Groundhog's Day.
Right.
You know, just essentially the same over and over. So.
Yeah. And time sort of starts to lose all meaning. You're sort of like, is it Thursday? Is it Sunday? What day is it?
Yeah, I was talking to my boss this morning, and we thought it was Friday until we realized we have staff meeting today, and I was like, I thought it was Friday. Why is it not Friday?
It feels like it should be Friday, but it is not Friday.
It's not. To those who are listening to the show, we're recording on a Thursday.
Right. Almost Friday. We're almost there.
Almost Friday. Almost there. So why did you set the book in Miami? That's just a curiosity. I'm always curious, like, when you're thinking of setting, like, you know, books and, like, putting that, because Miami does play airline. You mentioned some places like Disneyland Mall and Kendall, Hialeah.
Yes. My parents retired to Miami, and so I've actually spent a lot of time there. And I find Miami really unusual in the States, as it's really a place where I feel sort of like the most Latin experience.
It is.
And it just feels very overwhelmingly Latin in a good way. Mm-hmm. And I think that it just felt really like a natural fit to put my characters there and to sort of have the experience be there. And also, I mean, I just love Miami. I think it's fun. And I wanted to have it in a place where it was always warm, I think, because I wrote so much of the book in the winter. I think it was like giving myself a little vacation.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I love the warm weather. Like, it was like a little nice tropical vacation just to be in Miami. You know? Yes. Like, I don't know. I grew up in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and San Juan is similar to Miami. It's like pretty much the same, except Miami has Art Deco and Puerto Rico, San Juan has colonial.
Right.
Whatever.
House. Yeah. It's so beautiful too. Yeah.
It is. But it's the same stuff. It has high rises. I've seen beaches. I'm like, is it Miami? Is that Puerto Rico? I don't know. It's the same.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They do have a similar look, especially in pictures. They look similar.
They look similar. So it's like, you know, it's like, I thought it was like, it transported me back to that place. I was like, okay, it makes sense to have all the quinces, you know, to have all these parties and all this stuff, because it's like part of the culture. It's expected. Like, it's nothing unique. And I think if it was set in another city, it would have been this very outstanding thing that's different from the rest of the world. Like, here in Miami, it's like, oh, everyone having a quince. Like, it's like, yeah.
Right. Exactly. And that was something that mattered to me as well, because I wanted my character, I wanted Carmen to feel the lack, which she might not have felt if she'd grown up in a different place where there wasn't that sort of culture of, well, everybody has this ritual, everybody has this party. Because even in New Jersey, where I grew up, there were a lot of Latin people, but it just wasn't as much of a thing to have a quinceañera as it would have been if I'd grown up in Miami.
Yeah, true. And you got away with saying bad words in Spanish. I was like, so proud of myself. I was like, I know that word. It's amazing. Which is like, I love Carmen. Every time she says coño carajo, I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And FYI, those are words that are not, they're adult appropriate words for little kids in Puerto Rico.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, it was important for me that she be able to express herself in both languages.
Yes.
She was angry.
Yes, I love that. I think it's like, it's just unique. Like, I think it's someone who's growing up with both cultures, like, it's just like part of it. Like, you know, like, you and you know, not everyone grows up with like learning both languages, but you know, in places like Miami, it is expected. Like, there's
right.
many people who speak Spanish first, and so you're expected to know at least a little bit more. So
exactly, and of course,
learn the bad words. Yeah. You know?
Yep.
So I love this. So what are you working next?
I am working on another YA contemporary. It's still in very early stages, so I don't really have a story or an outline that I can share. It's also going to be set in Miami. That is solid, but everything else is up in the air, so I'm still figuring it out.
Oh, that's exciting. Are you a plotter or are you a pantser?
I am a pantser who is trying to learn to be a plotter and not succeeding super well at it yet. I definitely write sort of as the spirit moves me, and then I go back and I see what I've written, and I'm just like, oh, okay, so these things tie together. And then I do sort of a reverse outline where I see where everything is, and that's when really I start to move the scenes around. But I would love to be a plotter, because I feel like they get get it all done more cleanly. I mean, my drafts are sort of wild and then I have to chop them down.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I understand. I think I've asked this question to many authors and there's no right way. That's what I'll tell you. After I've asked this question to probably 100 authors, there's not a right way. Each person has their own method to their madness. And it's just like trying to figure out what works for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, I mean, obviously, in a perfect world, you'll end up in the same place. You'll end up with a manuscript that you're happy with and that tells a story. But it's the way that you get there that can be very, very different.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's have some book recommendations. What has been a book that you read this past year you can't stop gushing about?
Oh, well, we were talking about Rachel Lynn Solomon, and I read her YA Today, Tonight, Tomorrow, which I absolutely loved. It is a YA contemporary romance about two very, very smart teenagers who have been enemies their entire high school life, but who have been paired basically the last day of school to do a scavenger hunt around Seattle. And of course, as they work together, they realize that there's a very thin line between love and hate. And I loved that it was so funny. And another book that I've read recently is Happily Ever Afters by Elise Bryant, that just came out earlier this month. And it's about a young woman named Tessa who writes rom-coms and becomes blocked. And then her friend says, okay, I think the way to unblock you is basically for you to like live out different scenarios in sort of YA romance to sort of get your mojo started again. Mm-hmm. And I just, it's the kind of idea that I'm like, I wish I had thought of that. That's so clever.
I know. This is so, yeah, I have that book. My book club, most of the people read it and loved it. And I bought the audiobook because I've been listening to audiobooks easier. It's easier. And so it's on my to-do list. I have one more book to listen and then that's my next one. And I'm like ready for it.
It's super cute. Really cute. Yeah.
Sounds so delightful. So tell us where you can find you online.
I am on Twitter at, my at is Mardu Ledger, but you can just type in MG Hita and I will pop up for you because obviously I joined Twitter a million years ago before I had any inkling that I was going to be published. And now I feel like I can't give up my name because I don't want to lose my followers. So, and I'm also on Instagram at Mardu99, same reason. And I am working on putting up a website, which will actually be my real name and not some sort of weird nickname.
I love this. Thank you, Monica, for being on the show.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatreadnextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTORead10 to save. Visit whatreadnextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.